asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Catherine Tripp. Speculation is mounting that South African President Jacob Zuma is close to tendering his resignation after he postponed plans to address Parliament in Cape Town on Thursday. President Zuma was due to make the annual State of the Nation address. It's the first time it's been postponed since the advent of democracy in South Africa. Prince Mashele of the Centre for Politics and Research in Johannesburg has told South Africa's E-News channel that years of corruption and kleptocracy are catching up with the country's president.
People don't have good things to say about Jacob Zuma. They know him as a looter. They know him as someone who betrayed their hopes. So I think it doesn't matter what kind of posture he projects. He is a deeply troubled man. He is actually a villain.
The former president of the Maldives is calling for international help in resolving the current political crisis. Mohamed Nasheed, who is in exile, has asked India and the US to intervene to release political prisoners and impose financial sanctions. The crisis began when current president Abdullah Yameen refused a court order to release political opponents. His forces have since arrested two prominent judges. Wall Street is in for a turbulent day following 2 days of drops. Fears over faster interest rate rises has panicked markets and led to a global sell-off. FSN's Nick Harper has more from New York.
At the opening bell, all three US indexes, the Dow, the S&P and the Nasdaq, fell around 2% before seeing something of a recovery within the next 15 minutes, rising into positive territory. But will they be able to maintain that throughout the course of Tuesday's trading? Strong US jobs data on Friday worried investors. The fear is that the Federal Reserve may be more aggressive in its interest rate rises in 2018 as the economy is doing well and wages are rising. The last two sessions of sell-offs come after a year of rising prices, with the US stock markets seeing record close after record close.
The Paris attack suspect, Salah Abdeslam, who's currently on trial in Belgium, is refusing to attend court when the case resumes Thursday. He's facing charges of attempted murder in a terrorist context relating to a shootout in Brussels days before his capture. FSN's Jack Parrock has more.
Salah Abdeslam's refusal to attend court means the victims of the Paris and Brussels terror attacks are less likely to find out more details about the Islamic State terrorist network he was a part of. In his first appearance here in Brussels on Monday, the 28-year-old French national accused the court of an anti-Muslim bias and insisted he would not answer questions, continuing his silence. Once Europe's most wanted man, after escaping the 2015 Paris attacks in which 130 people were killed, he's being held in solitary confinement in France, where he'll also face trial. A huge police operation has been in place to bring him to Brussels for this trial, which he will now not attend.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you, Catherine. Welcome to Tuesday's programme. I hope you're well. We've had it all today, snow and sleet. It's a cold old day in the great city of Manchester. It is the 6th of February 2018, a red letter day in Manchester's history. This is your Richie Allen Show. Welcome to it. Thanks for joining me.
Asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv. It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now, this hour, Tony Boxford joins the programme. He's a former councillor at Hadley Town Council. He was amazed recently when two policemen turned up on his doorstep and asked to come inside. There, they warned him to be careful about his Facebook postings. Why? Well, Tony was writing on Facebook about the council's spending plans. Somebody didn't like it. The police were phoned and they turned up. This is very sinister. Tony joins me this hour. And in the second hour, the dollar vigilante, Jeff Berwick, returns to the programme. The economist, the broadcaster, the libertarian. We'll talk about the market shock, the FTSE, the Dow, over the last couple of days. We'll also talk about the decline or the depreciation in value of Bitcoin and much more. Jeff Berwick joins the program in the second hour. It's been ages since Jeff was on, and I look forward to that. We're live on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv. Welcome to the show. And of course, as usual, between now and the end of the program, if there's something you'd like to contribute yourself, you need only tweet it. It's at Richie Allen Show. Couldn't be simpler. That's how you do it on Twitter. Just tweet and insert in the tweet at Richie Allen Show and all is well. It is a red letter day in the history of Manchester. It is 60 years since the famous plane crash at Munich, which cost so many lives. Football players, great football players, and journalists, of course, as well. I've been a fan of Manchester United my entire life, although in recent years, and not because the team hasn't been doing so well, but even before that, my interest has declined in the game in general. But I had a book given to me when I was very young called There's Only One United, written by Geoffrey Green, and it was published in 1978, which was the centenary of the club. The club was 100 years old back in 1978, and that book meant a lot to me. You might have a book that when you were young you read over and over and over again. Well, I read that book over and over and over again, about the Busby Babes, the accounts of their great matches, and the tragedy, of course, as well. Meant a lot to me back then. During difficult times, I would take comfort in that book. So 60 years, and it means a lot to the people of Manchester. If you live in the city, you'll know that it does. Also today, the 100th anniversary of the passing into law of the Representation of the People Act. 100 years ago today, it was given royal assent, and women aged 30 and over were thereafter entitled to vote. Now, Theresa May has used it to talk about the problems women in public life face today, particularly when women in public life use social media. Theresa May was in Manchester today. I thought it was a bit gloomier than usual up here. Ho-hum. She gave a speech outlining plans to tackle hate against women. Hate against women online. Do you want to hear a little bit of it? Ah, go on then. We'll have a smidgen of what Theresa May had to say.
We will take action to make our electoral process more robust and offer greater protections for people taking part in elections. While intimidation is already a crime, we will consult on making it an offence in electoral law to intimidate candidates and campaigners. And because some candidates and their families have been targeted for abuse in their own homes, we will extend to candidates for local government the same protection which parliamentary candidates have to keep their home addresses secret.
Now, intimidation is already a crime under law. That was acknowledged by Theresa May. So why not leave it? Why make special provision for specifically targeting MPs or candidates? What's so special about them? Why do we need that? Ah, yes, of course. Joe Cox, the Batley and Spen MP, who was murdered in June of 2016, only days before the referendum, allegedly murdered by Thomas Mayer. May, of course, invokes the memory of Joe Cox. Have a listen to this, and it's very significant, this.
When we harden our hearts against those with whom we disagree, when we exaggerate differences, doubt motives, accuse others of bad faith, we risk destroying genuine debate, and we leave open the path to extremism and intolerance. We were reminded of that truth so tragically in 2016, when a politically motivated extremist murdered the MP Joe Cox. Following that outrage, some inspirational words from Joe's maiden speech rightly entered into our common political lexicon. Describing her experiences as a candidate, the new MP for Batley and Spen said, "While we celebrate our diversity, what surprises me time and time again as I travel around the constituency is that we are far more united and have far more in common than that which divides us. It is a lesson which we must never forget."
But we don't have anything in common with multimillionaire MPs and multimillionaire cabinet members. We don't have anything in common with them. We don't move in the same circles as them. We don't enjoy the same lives they enjoy. There is nothing that connects you, me, and the guy next door to us with Theresa May or any of the rest of them, right? All right.
Forget. That sentiment chimes much more closely with how the public feel about politics than do shrill and tribal insults. Most people don't view politics through an ideological prism. They want politicians to work together to improve their lives and our country.
But they don't work to improve our lives and the country. They work to improve their own lives while they sell the country piece by piece to multinational corporations and to Zionist-controlled banks. That's what they do, right? The problem with invoking the name of Joe Cox, and I've great sympathy with the family and friends of Joe Cox, I really do, I've never said anything else. How could you deal with that? It's a terrible thing. But just leaving what happened to her to one side, no, let's not leave what happened to her to one side. The problem with it is that social media had nothing to do with it. If you believe Thomas Mayer killed her because he turned into a radical right-wing maniac and stalked her when she was out on constituency business, if we accept that as the fact, well, social media had nothing whatsoever to do with it. There is no connection. You can't argue that trolling leads to murder. At least not in the case of Joe Cox. It ain't so. So what about social media then? This is what May said about social media.
Social media is one of the defining technologies of our age. For millions of people, particularly young people, it is the means by which they engage with the world, express opinions, and communicate with family and friends. In many cases, this is clearly a force for good. More voices can find clearer and wider expression. Campaigns can gain publicity and traction. Through the Me Too movement, victims of sexual harassment and assault have felt empowered to speak out using social media. But as well as being places for empowering self-expression, online platforms can become places of intimidation and abuse. This is true for children facing the daily misery of online bullying, where a smartphone allows their persecutors in effect to follow them home and continue to torment them even after school has finished. And it is also true for many adults. This squanders the opportunity new technology affords us to drive up political engagement and can have the perverse effect of putting off participation from those who are not prepared to tolerate the levels of abuse which exist.
Right. Again, there's something very simple being overlooked here. And there was an assembled media, and they did get to put questions to Theresa May after her speech, but none of them had the courage to ask her the most basic and probably the most important question. Prime Minister, block, right? Ban and block, right? Someone says something vicious, block. They can't do that again. And they can't set up new accounts as fast as you can block them. They'll get tired of it very quickly. Don't look. And if you do look, block. That's why Twitter and Facebook set up their platforms with those features clearly there. Somebody starts saying heinous things to you, things that you find disturbing, block them. It couldn't be simpler. Matt Busby is one of the most famous football managers ever to manage in this country. He was the, and today of all days, it's interesting that we're talking about trolling and we're talking about hostile messages and articles and stuff like that. He was the Man United manager who recovered from the wreckage at Munich 60 years ago today and built a new football team. Now, in the early days of the Sir Alex Ferguson reign at Manchester United, back when he was playing old Alex Ferguson back in 1986, 1987, things weren't going very well for him. They were going very badly, in fact. And he was in a dire situation. He was very, very depressed, very fed up with himself. And Sir Matt Busby, who was the club president at the time, he was still there. Asked him one day, what's wrong with you? And Ferguson said, the things they are saying about me in the press. And Sir Matt Busby said, why do you read them? Simple as that. Ferguson said, 'twas so simple and yet so profound. 'Twas embarrassing. It was so obvious. Just don't fecking read them. Surely today, when all these virtue signalling women are talking about Emmeline Pankhurst, born just a stone's throw from this studio, surely she would balk at this nonsense, making rules about trolling, trying to legislate for idiots. You know, saying I'll rape you is a crime already. So is saying I will kill you. So is poison pen writing about, you know, your personal life, your personal circumstances. It's all legislated for. Do you know the harassment Theresa May really wants stopped? Do you know what they really want to stop? They want to stop people tweeting them and accusing them of being whores for Israel or whores for multinational corporations. When people tweet Theresa May and say, you're a murderer because you gave all of those weapons to Saudi Arabia to bomb Yemen into the Stone Age. When they are hammered for selling the country off to the banks. That's what it's all about. When you tweet Theresa May and say, love, you should be in prison at least for 3 or 4 years for perverting the course of justice. When as Home Secretary, you gave Fiona Wolf and Elizabeth Butler Sloss the job of heading up the child abuse inquiry, knowing that they were intimately connected to people like Leon Britton and Greville Janner. You should be in prison. You shouldn't be Prime Minister. That's not hyperbole by the presenter of this programme. That's a fact. And that's what they want to stop. That's what they want to stop. Now today, Katie Price. Who's Katie Price, if you're not familiar with, if you're not familiar with entertainment and the magazines and all of that. Katie Price is a glamour model who's probably the most famous of all the glamour models. And I have to say something. I don't spend a lot of time paying attention to what Katie Price does or doesn't do. But I think Katie Price is pretty genuine when it comes to the love that she has for her children and her family. She seems very resolute, very determined woman. And I think there's probably more to people like Katie Price than meets the eye. You know, she bared all for Lads magazines many years ago. She made a lot of money out of that. She was married to a former pop star. But I think there's more to her. I think she's fairly bright. I think she's a tough woman. But she's wrong to be going to parliamentary committees today to demand that harassment and name-calling online should be outlawed. She's wrong. Have a listen to what she told the BBC outside Westminster today. This is the former glamour model, Katie Price.
But basically, it all started with my son, Harvey. He's got complex special needs, disability needs, and the amount of racial abuse he gets mocked for his disabilities. People have done videos on him. They've mocked him into sweet packets. I mean, you name it, he's done it. He can't speak to defend himself. I can. I've had 2 people arrested by the police. They took it as far as they could, but they couldn't charge them with anything because there's absolutely nothing in place. So I thought, do you know what? I need to do something about this, which is why I'm here today. It's not just people with disabilities. It could be anyone. It could be gay, straight. It could be in the workplace. It could be a teacher, teenager, anything. Something needs to be done about it. There's nothing in place whatsoever. So I'm going to fight as much as I can to get online abuse a criminal offence.
I mean, people are aware that there is a dark side to social media and that there is abuse online, but just how dark really is some of the stuff that you've had to face as a family?
Well, the thing is, if anyone's allowed... Sorry, I'm standing, it's freezing. Anyone's allowed freedom of speech, OK? So, but people know when you cross the line, and that's what something needs to be done. I mean, I couldn't even say on here now what things are said about Harvey. It's absolutely atrocious and people just shouldn't get away with it. But the thing is, if someone said it live like us now, you'd get in trouble. But just because it's online and it's written down, people don't seem to take it as serious when it is.
And what about that argument of free speech? Because, of course, some people will say, yes, that stuff is awful,
yeah,
but we have to allow people to say even awful things because that's part of our democracy.
Absolutely. You allow freedom of speech. Of course you could say things that people don't agree with. But like I say, I can't say it on here, but there's certain things. Maybe when I say, why don't you go and die? Things like this. Why don't you go and kill yourself? I don't like the colour of your skin. Things like that, even worse, which I can't say. You know you're not allowed to say that. So they, you know, would have to discuss at which level do you charge people.
Yeah, well, look, it's one thing to run up to somebody in the street and to mock their disabled son. You know, that guy, well, he wants his fucking head kicked in. Let's be honest about it, right? And I'm not somebody who advocates violence. You know, kick his head in. She should kick his head in. There's a huge difference between that and between somebody making stupid comments about a boy on the internet. Those comments, however annoying they are, have to be ignored. Block the person so that you don't have to read any more of their garbage and just move on. And when you educate your children, you tell them, look, sadly, there are Muppets. There are useless, cowardly Muppets. You know, masturbating to their own mother's underwear in their bedroom with their blinds pulled down, who never go outside, who haven't the courage to stand in front of somebody to say what it is they want to say to them. Just ignore those fools. Ignore them. Block them. It's got nothing to do with this. What they want to ban is they want to criminalise and outlaw people having a go at them, sometimes a very hostile go at them. I'm talking about the establishment now, for the things we discussed already. That's what this is all about. And I say again before I take a very quick break, there is no relationship whatsoever to online clowns trolling people and the murder of Joe Cox. None. I was going to talk about Nikki Haley for a minute, the US ambassador to the UN, and more fairy stories about chemical weapons in Syria. I might leave that till a bit later on in the air. Got plenty of time. Jeff Berwick joins the programme later on. In a minute, though, we're going to be talking to a man who was stunned when two police officers showed up at his front door to ask him questions about comments he made on Facebook. Back in a minute with The Richie Allen Show for Tuesday, February 6, 2018. Great to be with you.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv.
Welcome back to the programme. Now, listen up and listen up good. I'm going to start my conversation with Tony a little bit differently. I'm going to phone him live on air. I chatted with Tony briefly today and swapped messages with him. And he's very hard of hearing, Tony, and uses a hearing aid. He's a wonderfully articulate man, very bright man, former politician, but he's hard of hearing. And my accent is a bit strong, at least to his ears. But we did speak briefly today, and he has asked me to be as loud as I can when I ask him my questions. And I don't have too many questions to ask him. I want to hear his story firsthand. Tony Boxford is that former councillor at Hadley Town Council. And he was writing on Facebook recently about the spending plans that had been announced by the council. There was nothing personal in his Facebook postings. It was a basic comment, a basic opinion on what the council was doing. That's what it was, right? Somebody didn't like it, and the police were phoned. Two police officers turned up at Tony's house, and he let them in. And basically, they warned him about what he was doing on social media. And incredibly, when the local police department were asked about it by the Daily Mail newspaper, there was no semblance or hint of an apology, no guarantee that the police officers would be spoken to. They basically stood over it and said, well, you know, fair enough, two individuals have been spoken to by officers and offered words of advice. So I'm going to phone Tony, and I'm going to phone him live, and I'm going to be a bit loud during the conversation, but you'll be hearing more from Tony than you will from me. So let's give him a call there and hope this goes okay. Let's get Tony on.
Hello, is that Richie?
Tony, good evening. How are you?
I'm very good, Richie. How are you?
I'm very well, and thanks for coming on. I'm going to be as loud as I can, and I'm going
to... Yeah, that's fine, thank you.
Oh, that's marvellous. And I'm going to speak as slowly as I can, too. Tony, you've made national news today. Tell me, tell me about the circumstances that led the police to come knocking on your door. Go ahead.
Right, well, Richie, first of all, thank you very much for taking an interest in this matter and for your kind invitation to speak on your programme this evening. Well, first of all, if I could just give you a bit of background very quickly to the reasoning behind my little blog, which I think is what's caused some of the issues. And it's the only thing in the chat I had with the police officers. It's the only thing that they alluded to without being specific. So the reasoning behind it was basically that, I mean, I'd kept out of local politics for a couple of years because it really wasn't that much interest to me and not important enough. I was much more interested in national issues. But then the back end of last year, a couple of things kind of cropped up that took my interest, and so these are local issues that are of interest to me, and in my opinion, they're important to the town. So firstly, I was trying to raise awareness of these issues and why they're important, and secondly, to encourage people to engage in the debate, to make sure that what they wanted to happen actually is the course that elected representatives and their officials take. Otherwise, if they don't know what the public are thinking, then quite reasonably they're going to go off and do what they think is in the public interest. So I was simply trying to encourage people, don't wait until elections to make your voice heard. Hold councils, MPs, whatever, to account on issues that matter to you. Question them, challenge them, debate, ask why they're taking a particular course of action. Because I think that freedom of speech and making our representatives and officials accountable is really important for our democracy.
Yes.
So that's kind of where I was coming from. I wrote this blog back at the back end of, I think it's something like the 21st, 22nd of January, I think. Anyway, so I've forgotten all about it, basically. And then, so coming to your question about the police visit. So originally, I mean, look, there's a knock on the door. I'm getting ready to go out to a meeting. So I hear this knock on the door, and thinking it's charity workers, I just ignored it. I thought, I'm not interested, don't have the time, I'm going out. So I just basically ignored it. And then when I go out the door to go to my meeting, I saw the local PCSO. Now, most people in the town will know who she is. So as you do, you see somebody you know, as you do, say, you know, hi, how are you doing? You all right? You know, and then they, she and the lady sergeant came over and said, they asked to speak to me. And I said, well, I'm going out. It's not convenient. So then the sergeant asked, well, when would it be convenient? And I said, well, unless you're here to arrest or caution me, then no disrespect to you, but whatever it's about, it will not be convenient. I'm not interested. I don't have the time. So then she said, and she repeated this later on as well, she said that I hadn't done anything wrong. I wasn't in any trouble. So I asked, well, you know, what's it about? And they said they just needed to speak to me about some issues surrounding current events at the town council, which are very well known. It's all out in the public domain. Everybody here knows what's going on. You know, people who go to the meetings, they can see it all for themselves. So I sort of invited them in and said, okay, you know, so come on in a few minutes and then I really do have to go to my meeting. So they said that they'd been asked to come and have a chat and to ask me to be aware of my comments on social media about the town council. So it's like an all-embracing, you know, town council, everybody like associated with it.
Yeah.
People who work there and so on. So I asked, well, which comments specifically are you referring to? And they said they didn't know and repeated that they'd been asked to come and speak to me to ask me to be more aware of what I say and how I say it.
Wow.
So then I said, well, look, I asked, well, why am I being singled out? And I asked that in the context of, I mean, over several months from last summer-ish, late summer, I'm reading all this stuff on Facebook. People have been to the meetings and they're making comments on Facebook, and very strong criticisms of the town council generally and about specific issues and about specific people. And some of those views are expressed far more strongly than anything that I've ever said. So I, you know, this is why I said, well, why am I being singled out? And she said, well, we've been requested to speak to several members of the public. So I said, okay, so let's come back to, I asked again, well, which comments have caused an issue? Because one, if I've caused offence, then I'd like to apologise because it's not my intention to upset anybody. And two, obviously I want to make sure I don't tread on people's toes again. So I don't think that's unreasonable. And again, they said, well, we don't really know. So then they kind of alluded to this little blog that I'd written. So again, I'm saying, well, you know, what specifically? And they didn't know because they haven't read it.
They hadn't read it, Tony. Now, in the blog, you make some comments about spending and how money could have been spent in other ways. The blog is very benign and it's fairly friendly and it certainly isn't in any way derogatory or defamatory. It's what we do. We make comments on political events, affairs. You must have been stunned, Tony, that two police officers are in your house. Go ahead.
Well, I don't know about stunned. I mean, it's kind of, because I don't know her personally, but obviously I know her from being around the town. And I did go out with her one Saturday when I was on the town council very briefly. I went out with her one Saturday morning about, you know, parking issues, because I was trying to understand the problems from the police point of view. So I know her. So because she's there, I'm kind of, well, you know, it's There's nothing bad going on here. From my point of view, I'm thinking, well, I'm because they've actually said you've done nothing wrong. You know, you're not in any trouble. So I'm saying that, look, you know, this blog. I said it very clearly. I said, look, these are my personal opinions about local matters, not just the town council, about local matters. And I've referred to things that are in the public domain in one form or another, in the council's own minutes or in the press or the local magazine. But it's out there somewhere. It's in the public domain. Everybody knows. They go to the meetings. They can see all this stuff for themselves. So it's just my personal opinions. And I said, look,
Tony, you wanted to know, sorry to interrupt, you wanted to know who made the complaint or who contacted the police.
They wouldn't say.
They wouldn't say.
They were very non-specific. Because I'm saying, look, I'm expressing my opinions, as is my right in our democratic system. And again, I've asked which comments are causing an issue.
Yeah.
And again, they said they didn't know. So having repeated that I've done nothing wrong, I'm not in trouble, I said, well, look, unless somebody tells me otherwise, and you haven't, clearly, I've said nothing that's untoward. And they didn't contradict me. So then I said, well, look.
Sling your hook.
I went on to say, yeah, go on.
No, I was just going to say, you should have said at that stage, sling your hook. Thank you, ladies, but goodbye. That's what I would have said.
Well, look, Kim, look, I mean, look, they said a couple of times, they said, we don't want to get involved in all this stuff that's going on at the town council. And I said, trust me, ladies, I know everything that's going on,
yeah.
All right? I know everything that's going on behind the scenes. Because I know the personalities, I've got contacts, shall we say, close to the town hall. And I said, you really don't want to get involved, trust me, you don't. And they said, no, we really don't want to get involved. So then I'm kind of thinking, well, what's going through my head now is, well, then why are we having this conversation, you know?
Yes.
Because I went on to say, look, I said, look, if someone or the town council as a whole have a problem with what I've said, then please be grown up and offer me the common courtesy of speaking to me in person and we'll resolve our differences in a civilised way. That if they feel differently to that, then rather than use precious and overstretched police resources, because I'm very supportive of the police, and I said, you know, take the matter up in a more appropriate way. So they also alluded to the fact that I used to be a councillor for a brief spell.
Yes, a Labour councillor, yeah, that's right. You were there.
Yeah, at the time.
Tony,
at the time, I was a member of the Labour Party at that time. I'm not now.
Tony, let me ask, let me just come back in briefly. If you had said something defamatory about a specific councillor, that would be a civil matter. That would be for the councillor or the city manager to take up with his or her solicitor. It is outrageous and I think incredibly sinister that the police would come around to see you based on an allegation of a derogatory comment. If it was derogatory, there is a legal course for the council to take. The police is totalitarian, Tony, isn't it?
Well, look, let me be real. I've said this to everybody.
It's dreadful. Go on.
Last week or so, I said I'll make this really clear that I have no issue with the police at all. The local police are lovely, friendly, approachable, and very, very helpful. I have no issue with them at all. I was actually asked the question, and I've been asked it a couple of times, if I was going to make a complaint against the police. And I said, no, absolutely not, because I have no issues with them. In this instance, they were simply doing their job that they were told to do. And to make it clear that I did not accuse the police of anything.
Yeah.
I did not accuse them of anything. My issue is with the town council, and I will send a formal complaint to the monitoring officer citing a couple of paragraphs in their own code of conduct that pertain to harassing and bullying. And I can read this out to you if you want me to.
Just before you do, Tony, can I argue with you? I love a good argument. And you're a Labour man, and you like a good argument as well. Let me make my argument. I love your respect for the police, and I hear you that the police ladies were courteous and were respectful, and I understand that they were doing their job. I do. But and it's none of my business, but I would definitely be making a complaint, because to me, if a local authority doesn't like a comment made by a constituent, and if we have a situation where they can send the police around to somebody's house, that, Tony, is George Orwell type stuff, that. And that really worries me, right? But I understand, you're obviously a nice guy. I've been reading about you today. You're somebody who's respected.
Thank you.
I know you're well regarded as a driving instructor, and you're a very popular man. But Tony, we can't allow this evolve into, if I'm online today and I say, well, I despise the things that Theresa May is doing to the health service and blah, blah, blah. And next thing, Tony, I get a knock on the door from the old Bill. That's terrifying, that. Go ahead.
I understand what you're saying there, Richie. Because I actually said with a group of friends, I said, well, look, because I do know, I think it's in the press article somewhere, that somebody else had been spoken to about a comment that they made at a private function on private premises.
Yeah.
Which I do think, actually, your point is quite valid. That, I mean, if I'm around your house at a Christmas party, and I say I think my MP is a complete wally brain, that's between us.
Yes.
It's nobody else's business. So what should I then expect, that the MP is going to have martial law imposed on the town? I get where you're coming from on that, but what I would probably do, because I've been speaking to a friend of mine who's a recently retired police officer, and he said that if that was him in that situation, he would want the request, complaint, or whatever it is you want to call it, he would want it in writing, basically to cover his backside, because he's saying, if I knocked on your door in those circumstances without knowing specifically what it is that I'm talking to you about, that I would think I was on very, very thin ice, because basically you could quite rightly shut the door in my face.
Yes.
And then phone up and make a complaint. Now, if he's got nothing in writing, and he said, well, the town council said they wanted me to speak to Mr. So-and-so because of... And then the town council said, well, nothing to do with us. We didn't make any request. Now he's right in it.
Of course.
So what I said to him was that what I probably do is that I will probably write to the PCC and the chief to ask for clarification of the process that led to the officers coming to have a chat and the grounds for their visit, because I think I'm probably entitled to understand a bit better why they were
at
here.
At the very least, Tony.
On what grounds?
At the very least,
but
I mean...
But it's a complaint. I don't know. I'm still not convinced about that.
You know, if I'm a police officer and I'm speaking to you today from Manchester... If I get a phone call from Manchester City Council and they tell me that somebody has been critical of them on the internet, or somebody has said something about their procedures, as a policeman, Tony, I would tell the Manchester City Council person, if you don't go away, I'm going to fine you for wasting police time. I'm staggered by this. I'm really staggered by it and the implications of it going forward. You are a law-abiding, decent citizen. You served on the council. You make a comment on Facebook about something and the police are at your door. Tony, this is Iron Curtain stuff from the 1970s. It's ridiculous. I'm really angry about it, you know. I think you're a marvellous man. You're a magnanimous man, I think. Go ahead, Tony.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, I do, you know, you kind of think, well, I mean, clearly they really didn't want to be here. I mean, I could tell by the body language and what they said. And they, it's kind of, well, yeah, but and like I said, they're doing the job that they were told to do. It's almost like they were being used as a vehicle by somebody or persons or organisation to, certainly harass. I mean, would intimidate be a strong word? I don't know.
Definitely, to try and
shut people up. I can remember Wapping. I can remember the miners' strike in '84, where I did actually think that the government are using the police as a vehicle of the state. I wouldn't be quite as strong on about this particular thing. It's just that, I'm kind of thinking, well, look, somebody's obviously, it appears to me that somebody's trying to shut down all criticism, not just me, just shut down all criticism. And this is why actually, and when I said to the officers, I said, look, because they'd alluded to the fact that I had been a councillor, and I said, look, first of all, I don't see how that's relevant to your visit, because I have no issue with anyone at the town council on a personal basis. But I do have questions for them about some of the things that are occurring down there, which, as I say, is all in the public domain. Everybody knows what's going on. And that, in my and many other opinions, that they are not best serving the town and its residents. So I added, contrary to some of the people at the town council, they appear to be having an issue with me, and they appear to be making it personal, which it isn't as far as I'm concerned. So, as we're going through the conversation and because now I'm thinking, well, why are we having this conversation? And I said that I'd be very clear that I would continue to express my opinions, that I would continue to hold elected representatives and officials at all levels, from parish council up to prime minister, that I will continue to hold them to account, that I would not allow my democratic right to do so to be in any way compromised. And I added that, look, if I think I'm right, then I will make my point, and I will not shut up. And if they think I'm going to go away, I'm probably not. And I actually said to my friends, if they just ignored it, which is probably what they should have done, I probably wouldn't have said anything else. It was, I've had my say, that's it, and then it would have just gone away.
Tony, can I ask you?
Chat,
yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. No, my apologies. Finish that, and I want to ask another question. Go ahead, Tony. You were saying at the end of the chat.
I was going to say at the end of the chat, and I said very clearly, and I said they, meaning the town council officials, anybody associated with them. I said, they also now need to be put on notice, because you've been sent here to ask me to be aware. So they are now on notice, as far as I'm concerned, because I'm telling you this, that if I am harassed again by any individual, town council, anybody associated with them, then I will send all of my archived material from 2015, including abusive emails, of which I was on the receiving end, from various parties of the town council. I will send all of that to the monitoring officer along with a formal complaint, and B, I will take legal advice on whether I can sue the town council for harassment. So as far as I'm concerned, when you walk out this door, they are on notice. So then it's like, thank you very much, ladies. And we'll pass it on very good terms.
And that was that.
Thank you very much. Have a good day, and then I went off to my meeting. So,
Tony, let me ask you this.
That's basically it.
Let me ask you this. The Prime Minister was in Manchester today, and she was...
Sorry for you.
It was gloomier than usual, Tony. It was darker than usual up here. But she,
you mean that's possible in Manchester?
Yeah, it is possible, yeah. Just about, Tony, just about. Dear. She gave a very important speech about tackling harassment on social media and online. Now, my belief is that those in power are not really concerned about me saying something very rude about you or your wife or threatening you or threatening somebody with sexual violence. My concern, Tony, is they will use the example of the idiot who says nasty things on the internet. They will use that example when what they really want to do is shut down criticism of them and what they are doing. That is my opinion. Now, as a Labour man,
I totally agree.
Well, what do you think about that? You think I'm saying is right?
I totally agree with you.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Because we had all this in the since the election where Labour were way ahead on how to engage via social media. And of course, the youngsters, that's their forum. They don't read national printed papers, they read social media. And it did appear from some of the comments I've read that it seems like the government are trying to do something to avoid that happening again, whereby they can then have friends in the, the press will then hold sway again. And I agree. I think that they are trying to do something, which is why I said to you at the beginning, I think sort of making sure that our right to freedom of speech and civil liberties are not eroded. And I think it's very important to make a stand and make sure that that does not happen. So I completely agree with what you've said there. Yeah, absolutely.
Tony, I want to thank you very much for giving us your time today. Thank you so much
You're
for doing
welcome,
it.
You're very welcome,
Richie. It's a really important issue. I think you're obviously a gentleman, and I think you've conducted yourself with great class through the episode.
Thank you, Richie.
But,
thank you very much.
And listen, you're welcome back any time to talk about these issues, Tony. I mean that. I'd love to have you back on again in the future.
Yeah, thank you for that.
And thanks for putting, thanks for putting up with the sound issues.
And again, thank you for your invitation. I appreciate it.
It was an honour, Tony. Thank you. Look after yourself for now. Bye for now.
And you, Richie.
Bye
it's
now.
A pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, that was really important there. I'm delighted that Tony came on the programme. If you're just joining the show, you missed Tony Boxford there. Tony is a former councillor at Hadley Town Council. And recently, in fact, in late January, he wrote a blog on Facebook where he was very critical of the council. Not anybody specifically, but the council and its spending plans. And he was pretty surprised to see two police officers turn up at his door and ask to speak to him, you know, and effectively warn him about his conduct, telling him he needed to be a bit more careful with how he went about speaking about these issues on Facebook. Now, this is abject tyranny. There is no other way to describe it. It is outrageous. And I said today in my own article about this on richieallen.co.uk, I said that this is the biggest news story of the day. It really is. What sort of a planet, what sort of a country is it when the town council, annoyed because Tony has inside information because he used to be a councillor, annoyed and worried about whatever Tony was writing about, could send the police around? It's an outrage, right? It is absolutely incredible that the police would say, all right, we'll go around and warn him. Where does that end? Well, it doesn't end, because the next evolution of that is, or the next step as that evolves is, we'd like you to come down to the station. We see you've been saying things about Theresa May online there. We see that you've called her a murderer. Well, she fucking is a murderer. Well, you'll have to come down to the station. You can't say that. Well, I can say it. She's gone to Saudi Arabia. She's practically had Stinger missiles and chemical weapons in her arms and given them to the Saudis. Not only that, but she lent the Saudis our officers and our best observers to help them best use the weapons. So she is a murderess, a murderer, however you want to quantify it. But that's where it's going to go. I love the gentlemanly attitude of Tony. You know, the police are nice. They probably are nice. But nice doesn't stack up. They should have told the council where to go. How dare you? How dare you waste our time saying that you're not happy with a Facebook posting by a man who used to work for you? How dare you? Any more calls like that and I'll do you for wasting police time. That's what I would have said. I'm telling you, that boiled my arse today, that. 5 minutes to the top of the hour. There's an article on richieallen.co.uk about it there. Right. I'm going to take a tune. Jeff Berwick is live on the programme in the next hour. I'm looking forward to speaking with Jeff as well. It's been ages. Market volatility, Bitcoin and much more with Jeff. In about 10 minutes or thereabouts. We'll have time for a tune before that, though. This is your Richie Allen Show, live on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv. I am Richie Allen. The big old baldy head on me. The baldy bollocks is on the air. Live from Manchester, 4 to the top of the hour. Don't forget Jeff Berwick in a few minutes' time. Here's some hot chocolate. Sexual chocolate.
Never could believe the things you do to me. I never could believe the way you are. Every day I bless the day that you got through to me. 'Cause baby, I believe that you're the star. Everyone's a winner, baby. That's the truth.
That's the truth.
Such a thrill. Everyone's a winner, baby. That's no lie.
Errol Brown, Hot Chocolate on the Richie Allen Show. A minute to the top of the hour. Jeff Berwick in a couple of minutes. I mentioned Nikki Haley back in the monologue. Nikki Haley, the US ambassador to the United Nations. She's not a happy bunny. When is she ever a happy bunny? Haley was raging that the Russians won't express outrage or condemn the use of chemical weapons by the Assad government in Idlib. Maybe, just maybe, it's because there isn't any evidence to support the claims that the Assad government ordered the Syrian army to deploy chemical weapons against Syrian people. Maybe this is just desperate bullshit from the likes of Haley, because by now they thought they would be 2 or 3 years into their new puppet government in Syria, but they're not, because Russia put a stop to that. Anyway, Haley, not too impressed. This is what she said about the Russians' refusal to condemn the chemical attack that didn't happen. Who said it happened? Well, the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, who's a little chubby dude who sells T-shirts in Coventry, believe it or not. Oh, yeah. Really? Yeah. And the White Helmets. Yes, George Soros's White Helmets. Here's Nikki Haley.
Now we have reports that the Assad regime has used chlorine gas against its people multiple times in recent weeks, including just yesterday. There is obvious evidence from dozens of victims. So we proposed a Security Council press statement condemning these attacks. So far, Russia has delayed the adoption of this statement. A simple condemnation of Syrian children being suffocated by chlorine gas.
Yeah, the Russians haven't seen any evidence of it, Nikki. Maybe that's it. I was putting that audio together today, and I saw something in The Independent about Nikki Haley. And the UN would be an interesting enough place. Let me just see the Daily News. What is it? Yeah, it was in The Independent and the New York Daily News this afternoon. This made me laugh. It's about Haley being told by a Palestinian official. Yeah, I'll just stop that before it goes any further. She was basically told to shut up by the Palestinians at the United Nations. Things are fractious, to say the least, between the Palestinian official representatives at the UN and Haley and the Americans. I can't get the clip, sadly. I thought I could. Not to worry. I'll get it another day. Right, it's 2 minutes past the hour. Just heard from Jeff Berwick. He's standing by. We'll chat with Jeff in a couple of minutes' time. We're live on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 and TuneIn Radio. Do tweet the programme with any comments. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. You can engage with people. It's a lovely thing. If you go to Twitter, you see what people are saying. Just where it says search Twitter, put Richie Allen Show, all one word, in there, and you can engage with others and argue the toss with them about the big issues of the day. My friend Mark Bayerski is listening in Spain, in Mijas. Mark, how are you? Mijas Pueblo. And he says that a friend of his in recent days was fined some money. He hasn't told me yet, Mark, how much the fine was, but the fact that the person was fined is an outrage. Somebody was fined for not filling out a statistic census. That's outrageous. I can tell Mark that these documents keep coming in the door of our house, documents that want to know how many people are living in the house. It's all this electoral stuff, this register stuff. And we are advised that we could be fined if we don't fill out the documents and return them. So needless to say, we tear them up and throw them in the recycle bin. The cheek of these people to tell you, here's some papers, fill them out and return them or you might be fined. Huh? Huh? I tell you what, where do they get the balls, huh? Right. I'm going to take a break. When we come back, Jeff Berwick on the programme. It's been about a year since Jeff was on. Can't wait.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv. The Richie Allen Show relies on your support. Go to richieallen.co.uk and set up a monthly donation today.
Welcome back to the program. Right, we're going to get Jeff on the line. It's in the hundreds of euro, Mark tells me. Hundreds of euro. His friend who was fined for not filling out a census in Spain. That is the definition of tyranny. It is the definition of tyranny. Let's welcome back to the programme. He's not been on for ages. He's an outstanding guy, he really is. He's an anarcho-capitalist, he's a libertarian, a freedom fighter against man's two biggest enemies, the state and the central banks. He's an excellent broadcaster as well. He really is. You can find him at the website dollarvigilante.com. Anarchapulco is a conference that he runs. It's a massive conference attended by people from all over the world. That's imminent as well. We'll talk about that. Let's welcome back to our show our old friend, the Dollar Vigilante himself, Jeff Berwick. Jeff, welcome back. How are you?
Thank you, Richie. Yeah, I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm brilliant. You're winding me up again, Jeff. I'm looking behind
what
you with
I
that
this time?
That wonderful view behind. See, Jeff is on camera, folks, and behind him, well, it's a view to die for. Jeff, I look out at grim old Manchester, gloomy old Manchester. Listen, mate, it's brilliant to have you back on. You know I love what you do. It's incredibly interesting. It's incredibly important. Obviously going to talk about Bitcoin. Jeff, the market volatility we've seen over the last couple of days, and people saying that they're worried about interest rises. I heard an economist tell the BBC today, very early this morning in fact, that paradoxically, he said, the economy is on the up and up, or it seems to be on the up and up, but he said sometimes that scares the markets. Now, Jeff, I don't have your experience, but I smelled bullshit. What was that all about?
Yeah, well, you're totally right on smelling bullshit. That's what they do. They all these things that they do is when they're saying these sort of things is sort of to lead people mostly astray, really. You should almost always do the opposite of whatever the Federal Reserve or the central banks are saying. And they've, of course, had interest rates near 0% now since 2008. We're now in 2018. That's 10 years of basically 0% interest rates. It's a 0.5% or something like that. But it's actually negative interest rates when you take into account inflation. The actual money supply printing of the Federal Reserve is still around 8% per year. So your average person is actually losing about 7% per year in terms of purchasing power, which they not necessarily haven't seen yet, because it takes a little while to filter into the economy. And that's the whole ruse with the whole inflation game. But you're right. This is just total BS. And they have their plans. That the Federal Reserve and the central bank have been doing this for about a decade, since the Federal Reserve was founded in 2013. The Great Depression in 1929 was completely orchestrated by the central bank. They boosted the money supply massively in the 1920s, all by design, got everyone thinking, oh, this is a new boom era. We should all be investing in stocks. All the stocks are going up. The reason the stocks are going up is because they were buying them, the Federal Reserve and their cronies, and they were printing so much money. So all that money went into the stock market. And on purpose, and this is all documented now, back in 1929, they rescinded the money supply, caused the Great Depression, and bought up everything at pennies on the dollar. And that's what they're going to do again. And I don't know if it has started yet, but it was very interesting to me, Richie, that we had a 666-point drop, a very interesting number, on the 33rd day of the year, which was on Friday, which 33 is a very Masonic number.
It's
the most important number in Freemasonry. And of course, the U.S. itself was essentially founded all by Freemasons. All of Washington, D.C. is laid out with Freemason architecture and layout. You look at the back of the $1 bill in the U.S., it's got a pyramid with an all-seeing eye on it. They've got their stamp right on there. So I said that when I saw that it was down 666 points on Friday, on the 33rd day of the year, to me, that was a very clear signal that they are going to start putting things into action this year. We've been waiting for this next crash. It's been long overdue. We've had a massive rise in the stock market, all due to this money printing. And we'll see in the next few days. Well, of course, yesterday we had over a 1,000-point drop on the Dow, which isn't even that much anymore because the Dow is now around 25,000. But in the old days, a 1,000-point drop was unheard of, and it was the largest point drop in history. We'll see what happens. The market's a little up today, which is totally normal, but we'll see if they're going to crash the economy again like they did in 2008, like they did in 2001, like they did in 1929.
Brilliant stuff, Jeff. Yeah, the asset grab that you and I have spoken about before, you know, grabbing real wealth through these crashes, these manipulated crashes. So, Jeff, if they decide to raise interest rates, now, again, I'm not in any way patronizing you when I say, you know a lot more about this stuff than I do. I used to do interviews. I was always the go-to guy back in my commercial radio days. If there was an economist on, get Richie to interview him because Richie has a little bit of an insight. That wasn't necessarily true, but I had, you know, I had some little insight. When they talk about rising interest rates, the little guy, Jeff, absolutely has a panic attack because he thinks, I'm going to get done here. I'm going to, you know, the mortgage is going to get more difficult to pay, rents are going to go up, and my salary isn't going to go up. Are they going to raise interest rates? Or if they do raise interest rates, is that a massive red flag? That is that an alarm bell?
Well, we should point out, first of all, that they should not be in charge of deciding the interest rate of the entire market. This is the whole scam of central banking. This is called the manipulation of interest rates. And interest rates really is the price of money. That's how you tell what the price of money is. But they skew it by controlling and manipulating everything, and also counterfeiting money, which they call just money printing. So these things that no one should be actually doing, manipulation and counterfeiting, they do. That's all they do. That's their whole job.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right. When what they do in all these cycles, and these cycles usually seem to happen in about 7-year cycles. I've talked about the Shemitah in the past. They will actually lower the interest rates. They will get everyone into debt. They will really promote and market all kinds of debt instruments and mortgages. And of course, mortgage is French, direct translation. Death contract. They will get everyone into their death contracts, get them in at 0%, 1%, and then they'll raise the rates. And then a lot of people won't be able to pay it, and they'll end up having to give their homes back to the bank. And this is what they do over and over again. And the question is, are they going to continue to raise interest rates? If they do, it will absolutely destroy the economy as we know it today, because this economy has been built on 10 years of free money, 0% interest rates. If interest rates were to even rise to 5%, nearly everything would be bankrupt, including the U.S. government, which now has over $20 trillion in debt, way higher than where it was even when Barack Dronebomber, the Nobel Peace Prize winner, when he came into office in 2008, there was about $8 trillion in debt. So we've had over a double in the last 10 years. This is Banana Republic type levels. But if you look at the total debt, it's over $20 trillion. Now they have Donald Trump in, the small government man who actually has increased the U.S. government deficits. He talks on TV, and a lot of people still watch TV, unfortunately, television programming, and it's called programming for a reason. He talks about, oh, I'm going to lower the interest rate, lower your tax rate and help you. First of all, they haven't really lowered any tax rates. If they do, it's just a small amount, but they continue to go into massive deficits. So all they're doing is taking away from the taxes of what they're extorting people, and they're actually just devaluing their money, which is a hidden tax through inflation. So nothing's changed there. But if you look at the $20 trillion, let's just do the math, make it easy. Let's say interest rates go to 10%, and 10% is not a crazy number by historic means. We've seen central banks, even the U.S. central bank, numerous times at 10% interest rates. So if you do the math on that, $20 trillion at 10% interest rate, the U.S. government would have to pay $2 trillion per year in interest. And that is almost the entire budget of the U.S. government. So all of the money that they spend actually on things like wars, the Department of Defense, the Pentagon, and things like that, none of that would be handled by the budget anymore. It would all go just to pay interest on the debt. So this is the end game that I've been talking about for a number of years. I said in 2010 when I started the Dollar Vigilante that by the end of this decade, all of this stuff will fall apart. This will be a complete collapse situation. We'll see banks collapse. We'll see economies just go to basically almost a zero for a period of time. We'll see currencies collapse. And very interesting, Richie, I don't know if you know about the front cover of the Rothschild-owned Economist magazine. In 1988, 30 years ago, they said 2018, get ready for a new world currency. And we could be seeing this going into play this year where they collapse everything, all the currencies collapse, including the U.S. dollar, and then they come out with their savior currency, which will likely be something like the special drawing rights, the SDR, which will likely be a cryptocurrency, interestingly enough. And then they will try to get everyone using that, and then they'll have every transaction on Earth being tracked and taxed.
That's so right. That's your cashless society. That's your cashless society right there. So, absolutely. Jeff, is the recent depreciation in the value of Bitcoin, how does that relate to your belief? And I didn't know about that magazine article in 1988. Thanks for educating me on that. That's amazing, and it makes perfect sense, of course. So is that related then, the depreciation in value of Bitcoin, related to their plans to collapse currencies and introduce their own cryptocurrency?
Everything, of course, in today's day and age is related, and definitely the cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin have been a huge recipient of all this money printing. That's essentially where a lot of free money that's been printed in the last few years has all been going into cryptocurrencies. So we saw cryptocurrencies about a year ago, the entire market capitalization, including Bitcoin, of all the cryptocurrencies, I'm going to look it up because it's so crazy, it's so low. I just want to make sure I'm right on this, but the entire market cap of all cryptocurrencies 1 year ago today was under $20 billion.
Right.
It's currently about $360 billion. A month ago, it was $800 billion. So we've seen this massive rise. As I pointed out, a lot of the money that's been out there, just like we saw in the dot-com bubble in the 1990s, a lot of the money went into tech stocks. In 2008, a lot of the money went into real estate and death contracts. Then they pulled the plug. This time, a lot of that money has gone into cryptocurrencies. So yes, it's related, but this isn't all part of their plans. In fact, a lot of these cryptocurrencies, including Bitcoin, are the only chance we have to stop them from doing what they're doing, because it actually gives the power of money back to the people. And if people start using cryptocurrencies across the world, then that will massively lower the ability of the central banks to do anything. And when you take away the power from the central banks, you take away the power from a lot of these governments. They won't be able to do most of the things they do, because a lot of that is paid for by the inflation and the manipulation of interest rates of central banks. So we're in an interesting situation here where we have the cryptocurrencies coming down massively in the last month, at the same time as we're now seeing the stock market starting to crack. And now we're hearing rumors or talk about them raising interest rates now. To me, it was very interesting that in the last couple of months, you saw the mainstream media actually get quite on board with Bitcoin. It was on CNBC all the time. They were talking about how high it could go.
That's right.
$100,000, $1 million. That's what they do. Part of the way they manipulate markets is through their media.
Infomercials, Jeff. Infomercials disguised as news. It's a wonderful ruse, isn't it? Wonderful stuff. Yeah, yeah. Sorry to interrupt you, but that's what it is. It's an infomercial. I saw those reports about Bitcoin. They were almost, begging their viewers to invest or to try and get involved with Bitcoin. You're right, Jeff. Go ahead.
Yeah, so that's what they did. And in hindsight, I could see that's what they were doing. I did mention in the last few months, I told people with Bitcoin rising well over 10,000 when it was at near $20,000, I said to take some profits. This is a massive spike that is gone parabolic. We're going to see definitely it pull back from here. Now we've seen that Bitcoin's now currently around $7,000. So they brought in their marketing hype right around the time that they actually put Bitcoin futures live on the CMOE so that they can actually trade through their Wall Street funds Bitcoin. So right at the same time as that futures happened, I think what happened is they loaded up on futures, went long Bitcoin, promoted it through all their media. And what happened likely is they once it hit around 20,000, they decided to start selling the futures. And then all of a sudden, all the media came out. Bitcoin might be a scam. This is a scam. You better get out. You better be careful. It's very typical what they're doing. So they're definitely involved in this market now. And this is the first time we've seen that. So, a lot of the things that have been happening in the last few months is because they've begun to get involved in this market.
Our guest is Jeff Berwick. You know Jeff very well. Amazing guy. DollarVigilante.com. Live from Acapulco. It's great to have Jeff back on the program. It's been a long time. Jeff, I'm not going to argue with you about Bitcoin and the cashless society. We've had that argument before. My listeners know my take on it. For me, and I don't have any gold or any silver, Jeff. I don't have the money. But for me, those tangible assets and cash are king, because while I do believe you that those behind Bitcoin, that they're the real deal, they're genuine and their motives are benevolent, I just worry about it, Jeff, that it's still there to be got at. It's still there. It would be easier to go after that than it is to go after your silver, your gold and your hard cash. That's all I'm going to say on that, but you can shoot me down there. Go ahead.
Well, you might be surprised to find out, Richie, and you might not have been paying attention to what I've been saying for the last couple of months, but I've been saying that they have started to infiltrate Bitcoin now. Yeah. We've actually seen essentially the most powerful people in Bitcoin is a company called Blockstream, which is actually generally owned by the same people who run Bilderberg. And they have come in and they have started to convince a lot of people that Bitcoin doesn't have to be fast. It doesn't have to be cheap anymore. They've increased essentially, they've done things that have made it so that the cost of transferring Bitcoin has gone up dramatically, and they've started to promote it as being a digital gold, because what they want, the last thing they want, these banksters, whatever you want to call them, Illuminati banksters, Zionists, Jesuits, Masons, they're all different tentacles of the same octopus. What they want is control of the money. It was the Rothschilds who said in the 1800s or even 1700s, it was a long time ago, that I care not who makes the laws. Yeah. I care who controls that's the right. money, and I control the money. And that's what they've decided centuries ago, is that they wanted to control the money, and through that they can influence all the governments in the world, which they still do to this day, through their essentially running of these central banks. So the last thing they want is a currency to get out there that they can't control, and that was Bitcoin. And they've nefariously managed to get into it to some extent so far and slow it down. And they keep talking about now it's a digital gold. So you should think about it as gold, but you can never use it as an actual currency. This is what they want, because if we as people start using a currency that they can't control, the whole game's over. The entire house of cards collapses. And so they've actually infiltrated to some extent into Bitcoin so far. So you might not know this, Richie, but I've actually been one of the loudest people talking about this and saying that this has happened and that we should be very careful. We should even be looking at alternative cryptocurrencies, since they've somehow managed to infiltrate to some extent Bitcoin. Now, they haven't completely infiltrated. It's not like anyone can ever control Bitcoin or own it, but they've managed to influence enough power and into the space where it's convinced a lot of people to go in the direction that they are wanting it to go, which is not as a currency. So
I'm going to tweet your article, Jeff. Jeff has written about this on dollarvigilante.com. Has Bitcoin been compromised? It's very good. I was aware of it, Jeff. I was speaking tongue-in-cheek. I was on your website today reading your articles, and I'm delighted that you're putting that out there for people to think about that. I'm going to tweet that out while we're talking. And I don't want to be jumping backwards and forwards between things, but I have a feeling that a lot of what we're seeing today, FTSE, Dow, what you've been talking about Bitcoin, I have a feeling that a lot of this has to do with the whole Brexit thing. And I'll tell you why I think that. Obviously, in recent weeks and months, we've seen anti-European Union parties gather momentum in countries like Italy and in other countries around Europe. Obviously, the United Kingdom took the vote to leave. There's a real pushback against that by the European Union bureaucracy. But I have a feeling that these Jesuits, Masons, brilliantly described by you, Zionists, whatever you want to call them, they're desperate, Jeff, not to allow the United Kingdom leave the European Union. And I think a lot of the volatility, even Bitcoin coming down and the interference you talked about, it must have something to do with Brexit. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. As I mentioned earlier, everything's fairly related. And I commented a lot on Brexit at the time. And I said that what I actually think happened during Brexit is they actually allowed it to go through because there was so many people getting so upset about all this globalism and the EU control of everything in Europe that they couldn't just fix the vote like they normally do and get away with it. There was too much uproar. So I think it's very similar to Donald Trump. I think they are allowing things like Brexit, the Brexit vote to go through for Brexit, and allowing Trump to get into office as this savior who's going to change everything, who hasn't changed anything yet whatsoever, to give people the idea that they have some sort of power or control, or that they have some say in things, and that's the whole democracy sort of thing. But I also said, right as soon as Brexit happened, I said, I'll bet they won't actually fully let it happen. They'll let this go on for years. They'll use all kinds of tactics. They'll crash the economy and then say, oh, that's because you're trying to do Brexit, so you better not do it now. So these are all ongoing things. As people try to keep from going towards this globalist route, they're just trying, and as you pointed out, and I think you're quite right, they're quite desperate. Thanks to the internet, thanks to shows like yours, thanks to thousands of others getting this information out there, people are somewhat waking up now and starting to realize that something is wrong about what's going on here. And as they're doing it, these people, the elites, if you want to call them that, are having to find different ways to try to make things go their way. So yeah, absolutely, Brexit is totally tied to this. Of course, you've seen the Catalonia thing in Spain, and there's numerous what do they call it when a country leaves from another country? Secessionist movements. There's numerous of those going on all over the place. And we're watching on the internet grandmothers getting beaten by cops in Catalonia as they go to vote for secession. And of course, Richie, if you know me, you know my favorite saying is, if at first you don't secede, try again. I'd like to see secessionist movements go down until there's 7 billion free individual government people in the world, and there is no overarching one world government or even smaller governments. I'd like to see it go in that direction. That's the exact opposite direction of where they want to see it go. But you're quite right. All these things are very tied together. Most people can't connect all the dots on them. I know you're friends with David Icke, and he's one of the best dot connectors out there. I learned a lot of dot connecting from him. And to me, having more of a financial and monetary sort of knowledge, I can connect, and political as well, I can connect a lot of these dots and see what's going on. And yes, it's absolutely all related. And it's really that there's a lot of people starting to wake up, and they want a little bit of freedom, and they're trying to stop it everywhere they can. They're putting out fires everywhere everywhere they can. And we'll see what happens in the next few years. You know, if it goes their direction, we end up with a one world government and a one world cryptocurrency, which they control, can inflate at will, and can tax everyone on every single transaction. We will have tyranny on Earth like we've never known it. But if we can go another direction where we have other cryptocurrencies, which they can't even track whatsoever, there's numerous privacy coins out there like Monero and Zcash. You can't even tell who has what. And if people start using that and they can't tax it anymore, and if they start using that currency more and more and they stop using currencies like the US dollar or the euro, this whole house of cards of this entire one world government control enslavement system that they've been working on for centuries goes away very quickly.
It comes down. You're right, Jeff. I'm obviously an Irishman. There's no hiding this outrageous accent. I come from the Republic of Ireland. And when I talk to people back home who know me from my commercial radio days and think that I'm a nutty conspiracy theorist now, I ask them, I say, are you okay with the fact that when the Irish government releases or wants to release a budget, wants to produce its spending plans for the year, it must get permission from Germany? Are you happy with that? And you know, Stockholm syndrome is an amazing thing, Jeff, because some of them will say, oh well, Jesus, we had it so good for so many years, we lived beyond our means. Jeff, I want to strangle them to death. We lived you didn't live beyond your means. And you know, I know you must be following this Carillion scandal here in the UK. I mean, talk about Stockholm syndrome. Here you have a massive company that was given huge construction projects by the UK government even after it issued three major profit warnings. And not only that, but the former Chancellor of the Exchequer, a guy called George Osborne, he consulted with a hedge fund managing company in America, and they were making bets that Carillion stock would fall. So they obviously had inside information that the company was worthless, and yet the English government kept giving it billions and billions of pounds for contracts, even though the company was collapsing. Jeff, there's never been a more obvious case of fraud, of insider trading. And you know what, Jeff? People will go and watch the soccer. When are they going to get up, Jeff, off their arses and take to the streets and say, enough's enough now. We've had enough.
I think, unfortunately, it's going to take a major collapse to shake people out of this stupor. And you kind of pointed out that people are open to this idea that we've lived beyond our means and these sort of things, and we deserve, you know, to be more enslaved now.
Self-flagellation,
You know, when you look at your average person, they're born, and not to mention that a lot of men or boys, little boys, a few days into life, have like a lot of the skin off their penis chopped off in a very traumatic event, which will make it so they never have a full sexual life ever again and never can fully experience true connection with a woman, in my opinion. And I'm circumcised myself.
Me too.
Then they inject them with about 30 vaccines before their immune system is even developed, essentially sentencing them to a life of illness, which will only enhance and make profits for the pharmaceutical industry. Then as soon as they can just start walking around and start talking, they get thrown into a government indoctrination camp for 12 years and get fed mostly propaganda. In the US, they do their Pledge of Allegiance every morning. You got the picture of the president on the wall, which I don't care if it's Trump or Bush or Obama or anyone. It might as well be Little Kim from North Korea. It's the exact same
people
thing to me. When I look at that, it creeps the heck out of me. But that's exactly what they're doing. Then they go home. And what do? They turn on their television programming. And David Icke talked a lot about this. In fact, I learned some of the stuff I know about this from him. That is just a brainwashing,
mass mind control,
hypnotizing machine, and they just sit there all night, and they get all this propaganda goes into their head. So it's no doubt, and it's no surprise that your average person really has no idea what's going on. Not to mention the fluoride in the water in the U.S. And I could go on and on about how they've been taking out the nutrition from all the food that your average person eats, and it just go on and on. So it's really not a surprise that your average person is like this. Unfortunately, from my experience, I think it's going to take something major having to happen to a lot of people, losing a lot of things, before they start to wake up, because Your average person, it appears, is happy being a comfortable slave. As long as they've got their air conditioner and their car, even if they're paying for it for 6 years, and their house, even if they're paying for it for 50 years and a death contract, and they can watch their football games, as you pointed out, your average person is not willing to change as long as they have sort of those sort of basic things. So I think it's going to take quite a big crisis for your average person to wake up. But the good news is, Richie, that we don't need everyone to wake up in order to change this. In fact, all we need to do is create new systems that make the old government and central bank systems obsolete, and people won't even know that we've gotten rid of government and central banks. They'll just start using things like, for example, cryptocurrencies. And we've talked about Bitcoin, but there's many other cryptocurrencies. If people start just using those things, very quickly they'll be like, oh, this is way better. It's way easier. It's way faster. It's way cheaper. And hey, I actually control it. That's kind of interesting. Yeah, yeah. And before you know it, that'll take the power away from the central banks, which really takes the power away from the governments, and the world will change. It's very much like all the changes that we've seen in the last 20 years. For example, the largest hotel company in the world is Airbnb. They own no hotels. The largest retailer in the world is Amazon. They have no retail shops, except for a couple.
Yeah.
The largest taxi company in the world is Uber. They own no taxis. And if you ask your average person who didn't notice before how crappy the government taxis are and how unhappy the drivers are and how crappy they treat you, once they start using Uber, they're like, hey, there's like a button on my phone and I press it and this is way better. It's actually cheaper. The service is way better. And the guy actually knows where to go. I don't have to explain it to him with like a paper map or anything like that. So that's an example of how you've kind of almost gotten rid of government taxi systems almost across the world without having to educate people about why it's better to have private markets rather than these government-run markets. And the government, of course, also is involved with central banks. So we could see by creating these new systems, and people are creating them all the time right now thanks to the internet, where we could change these systems without your average person even knowing these changes are happening. And we, if it goes far enough, we could eventually reach a day in the next 5, 10, 20, 50 years, whatever the amount is, where we actually don't really have any central banks left and governments are either small or non-existent and don't really destroy the economy anymore like they used to. And your average person won't even know why they went away. That's the beautiful thing. And that's really the answer, in my opinion, is creating these new systems. And that's why, to me, the cryptocurrency market is so important.
It's a race, Jeff, isn't it? Because in the meantime, they're planning financial crisis after financial crisis. And each one results in a massive transfer of what we call real wealth. You know, land, of course, and most importantly, land and property. So it's a race. And you think that if they get away with it, that the next crash will be Armageddon. And this is not to scaremonger people. It isn't. But it's to watch out. And this sort of volatility we've seen, now we're not saying that this is the beginning of something, it might not be. But the next one, you've said it, I think, one or two other economists that I've come to know over the years of making programs like this, they reckon the next one is going to make what happened in 2008 look Mickey Mouse, basically.
Absolutely. The Great Depression in 1929, this next one will be called the Greatest Depression. It will be remembered for history after it. You just look at the numbers, because really, really briefly, Richie, if you just look at what happened, they really took over the money system in 1913 with the founding of the Federal Reserve, which was put in basically on Christmas Eve. I believe the president at the time was Woodrow Wilson.
That's right. Yeah.
And as soon as he got out of office, he said, I feel so bad. I essentially sold my country to the banksters. He knew he had done that. They actually put in the income tax that very year because that was all part of their plan. There was no income tax in the U.S. until 1913. And then they did this big thing. They went through the Great Depression. They collapsed everything. And then what happened on 1933, right after all that? Well, now we have to take away everyone's gold because so they actually, in the U.S., the land of the free, in 1933, they made it illegal for private citizens to own gold. This is all part of their plan to get, because gold is personal power sort of money. They can't control it, same as some cryptocurrencies. So then they built it up again. Then they went into World War II, mostly all contrived again, in my opinion. This is what they do. They create these sort of things to scare people. Absolutely. And give their power away to the governments. Then they actually bankrupted the U.S. government again with the Vietnam War, which was all based off of a false flag in the Gulf of Tonkin, and killed millions of people over it, which they love. These people are very evil. They love all this stuff that they do. They line their pockets with all the war profits. And then they were so bankrupt by 1971, August 15th, that Richard Nixon, that other great president, went on the television programming and said that they're going to have to take any gold backing away from the dollar. This is after they had already made it illegal for Americans to even have gold. And since that date in 1971, we've actually been on a completely fiat currency system backed by nothing. There's nothing backing any government currencies in the world. There used to be a couple. Switzerland retained some gold backing until a few years ago, but now there's none. There's no government currency that has any backing.
Jeff, this is the greatest tyranny. Can I just interject? Isn't this because your job, and you do an amazing job, is bringing this to the masses, is bringing this to people who would never hear this. And you do an amazing, I'm certainly not buttering you up, you do an amazing job. Isn't this the way in to the perplexed, to the man and woman getting their news from CBS or Fox or CNN? They know something is wrong, they just can't put a finger on it. We need to tell them how the financial system runs in the world, because it's very easy to explain. Very easy. The Rothschilds and the Rockefellers and the Warburgs and the Oppenheimers and these people, they basically invent money, loan money into existence out of thin air, charge interest on it that you can never pay back, and through that they have accrued all the real wealth on planet Earth. It can be proven. Is this central, this one issue, to waking people up to what's going on, Jeff?
Yes, it is, but because they haven't never been taught anything about economics or the monetary system, how it works in their government indoctrination camps, or even if you go to college, if you go to college in the US or probably in the UK and you take economics, you will never actually be taught how the money system works. This is all on purpose. And if you try to talk to your average person about it, as soon as you say economics, they just close their eyes, because they've been told, actually, this is all on purpose, that economics is very complicated and you need people like Ben Bernanke with these big blackboards with all these formulas.
Yeah.
Economics is very, very simple. It's all it is, essentially, is people trading. So if you make a pencil and I make food and you want a pencil and you want food, we exchange. That's all economics is. And of course, then you can use money so that if you don't need a pencil, but you still want to be able to sell your food to me, that we have another means of exchange. That's basically it. You can actually teach economics and money in a few minutes to your average person. In fact, there's a book out there. It's the greatest book. If anyone out there wants to just understand everything they need to know about economics, it's called Economics in One Lesson. I believe it's Harry Brown, or I actually forget who wrote it, but it's like a little pamphlet this big. It teaches you everything you need to know about economics. But kind of getting back to my point about my short history lesson there of what's been going on from 1913 and the 1971 ticking away of gold from all the backing from the currencies, is we've since then have every government in the world gone very socialist, and they're, I know you kind of like that word for whatever reason, but they've gone into a lot of spending, a lot of welfare state, a lot of all these sort of things, and a lot of wealth redistribution. So they take money from some people and give it to other people. Those things can't last on their own, but yes, because they can print the money, I don't know any governments who actually have a profit. I think there's one or two in the world. Every other government just goes into debt every year, and
that's because
there's nothing backing the money, so they can just continue to print the money. So we're at the stage now where we've had 40 years of governments printing money and going more and more into debt. And if you look at the U.S. government, which I know the best because it's the largest, you just look at everything they have, it's all bankrupt. The Social Security system is absolutely bankrupt. They say this themselves. I think the most recent numbers is it'll be completely bankrupt next decade. I think it'll be sooner than that. In fact, it's bankrupt right now. If they couldn't print money, it's over right now. The Medicare, that's all bankrupt. Even the backing of insurance of money in banks called the FDIC, that was bankrupt years ago. Everything bankrupt. So anyone who kind of really knows financials and understands all the what's going on, just knows that, yes, the next collapse that happens, when it happens, and it could be this year, and I'm thinking it is going to be this year, but what I've seen in the last few days is it's going to wipe everything out, because everything is based on debt now. Everyone's in debt. Everyone's got a death contract. Hardly anyone owns their car. It's all a lease or a loan. Credit card debts are at highs. Student loan debts to go to useless college for the most part to get your Bachelor of Art degree. Most people in the U.S. have tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt.
Same here, Jeff.
The whole thing is debt-based. So even raising the interest rates, this is where all the panic comes in when they say we might raise interest rates 0.25%, which should not even matter at all. That's how indebted the entire society is, including private people and government and corporations. And so if they even raise interest rates at all, the whole thing will collapse. So that's where we're at right now. And so, yes, this next collapse will be the big one. There will be no easy way to get out of this one. The best way to prepare, of course, is what I've been talking about. Own some gold, silver, some cryptocurrencies. Be careful with the cryptocurrencies. They're volatile, but own some of them for sure. Own some hard land, as you brought up. That's one of the best sort of things to own. Real hard assets that they can't inflate away and that won't disappear when this entire house of cards comes tumbling
down. There's some bastards, aren't they? They're constantly harassing people. I was speaking to a senior lady, a neighbour of mine, the other day, and she doesn't listen to the programme. She's not aware of the programme. But she was talking to me about, we were talking about the economy, we were talking about the news, and she said, I'm always getting these letters about releasing some equity in my house. And before she even said anything, I said, listen, don't ever, and she said, she stopped me and she said, you don't need to educate me. I would never do that. I said, this releasing equity in your house, getting you to take out a loan on your house, it's insane. They want your house. It's just unbelievable. And, you know, I rent the property we live in here in Manchester. The banks in the city don't know that. So there's an avalanche of literature coming through about releasing some equity. Do you own your property? Release some equity. It's never ending, Jeff. And I wanted to ask you something as well. On the one hand, you have this planned crash. On the other hand, Jeff, people like you and others who've been doing your work for years, writing your articles, educating people for years, we have this tyranny developing in the UK, this crackdown on social media, Jeff. The Prime Minister of the country today talked about we need to tackle hate speech, we need to change the discourse. And Jeff, before you came on tonight, I interviewed a man who used to be a Labour Party councillor. And would you believe, Jeff, a couple of weeks ago, two police officers knocked on his door and asked to be left inside. Why? Because he had written a critical post about his local council on Facebook. A post that wasn't derogatory or defamatory or insightful in any way. It was just a post, and the police came to warn him about his conduct on social media. I'm not making that up. It was in the national press today. This is what's coming down. While they're planning what they're planning, Jeff, they're also planning to stop guys like you getting the word out. Am I right?
Oh, absolutely. This has been going on for years. This was really the first crack, the first issue that these elites had was the internet, because for the first time in the 1990s, people had the ability to communicate and to actually get information that was outside of the mainstream media. It's taken them a long time to figure out how to really slow that down. They're starting to get a lot better at it now, of course, with Google really censoring a lot of stuff, Facebook really shadow banning, and actually Facebook just recently said they're not allowing anyone to even post about cryptocurrencies anymore and things like that. So all kinds of censorship things. And then of course you have the other thing, like a lot of the false flag attacks that they constantly are doing to scare people. They're in the UK right after a couple of them where they, you know, whether it's false flag hoax or even if it was real, but the ones I saw didn't look real whatsoever, but like, you know, real in terms of what they said it was, you know, just like 9/11, they said it was one thing, but it was another thing.
Right.
But right after that, Theresa May came out and said, we have to shut down the internet because that's how they communicated about how they were going to drive over some people down the street is on the internet. So therefore we have to shut it down. Even Donald Trump, the great person that a lot of people seem to think is some great person, has also talked about, he said, even before he got elected, he said, we have to figure out a way to shut down this internet. that. We have to keep people from having access to information. So they talk about these sort of things all the time. This is, another big thing that they do. They really make it so a lot of people who are putting a lot of truth out there just cannot get, no one can see it on the internet. And again, Richie, this is where we create new systems that they can't stop. So there's actually cryptocurrencies out there that are actually social media networks based on a blockchain. There's one in particular that everyone should remember this. It's called Steemit.com, S-T-E-E-M-I-T.com. And you sign up on there and you just start posting on there. You actually get paid in cryptocurrency if people like your post. So this is very different than Facebook, where you can post whatever. You never get a penny from it. They actually sell the advertising and make all the profit from it. It's very different. Plus, you can't censor it because it's based on a blockchain. So as soon as someone posts something on there, it's you cannot remove it. There's no place to go to remove it because it's on too many computers across the world to be able to go with all the governments and shut them all down. So again, this is what I'm talking about.
It's a good model.
We're creating all these new systems that will get around and make their systems obsolete. So no matter how hard they try to censor it, there's even cryptocurrencies out there that are trying to create their own internet on top of the internet, which will be all based on a blockchain that they can't actually censor or shut down anything. These are all things that are in process right now. And as you pointed out, it is a race and we'll see who wins at the end of the day. But absolutely, they are trying to censor and shut down anyone who has an alternative narrative to what you see on your mainstream media, which, as you pointed out earlier, is nothing even close to the truth. It's at best an infomercial, and really what it is for the most part is propaganda.
It's propaganda. Absolutely dumb you down, make you believe that the left-right paradigm is the only way and is the right way. You're absolutely right. Steemit is very interesting. It is really interesting, Steemit. I've been looking at it recently, and I'm going to look really hard at it in terms of the content that I put online. I do love, though, the old-fashioned websites, Jeff. You know, I know where to find Jeff Berwick. I know dollarvigilante.com. The articles are there. Nobody can stop me doing that. Now, if I was to be spending all my time on Facebook, I know that even though I follow you and others on Facebook, I know I'm not going to see your posts because you're being shadow banned and all of that. But I love the websites. We recently put a decent website online for the Richie Allen Show, richieallen.co.uk. And I'm kind of banging on my listeners' heads, Jeff, to say, don't expect to see news about the Richie Allen Show on Facebook. Go to richieallen.co.uk. Go to dollarvigilante.com. What's Jeff saying? Right, I'll have a look. Dollarvigilante.com. We need to have our own websites, Jeff.
Yeah, that's just a really basic thing, right? Definitely people should be doing. And another very basic thing is have your own email list, because that's very, very hard for them to stop. They could, you know, if I was saying enough stuff that they really wanted to get rid of me, they would just say I did child pornography or something. That's what they always say whenever they want to take someone down. And then they'd come in with their warrants and their subpoenas, and they'd shut down the web host where my website's hosted, right? So they can do stuff like that. But if you have your own email list, even if they did that, I could still get out my information. So I don't know if you do that, Richie, but
I don't.
If you don't, you should definitely do it. You should be sending out an email, you know, once a week or whatever, updating your audience on what's going on. Because as you pointed out, they're not going to be seeing it on Facebook or on a Google search very often.
Jeff, we're rapidly running out of time. That's flown by. It always does. I want to ask you before we do. Thanks for coming back, by the way. It's been too long. And I mean that, Jeff. I don't say stuff like that. I really do mean it. You should be on more often. We're always delighted to have you on the program. Tell us about Anarcho-Pulco, Jeff. It's very soon. It's imminent, in fact. It's hugely successful. I've heard from people who've attended it over the last couple of years. They love it. What's happening this year?
Yeah, absolutely. So Anarcho-Pulco is the world's first anarcho-capitalist or voluntarist, essentially true libertarian conference, where we believe in complete freedom for people, which means if you believe in freedom, you can't believe in government, because government's based on extortion and violence, essentially. It was the first one. We started 4 years ago. It started off very small, was about 100 people. The second year was about 350 people. The third year last year was about 600 people. And this year we actually sold out. We were not expecting at all, but apparently this Liberty stuff is starting to catch on. We sold out at about 1,500 people, so it's actually sold out. It's from February 15th to the 18th. We also have one full day on cryptocurrencies. And the reason that I really think the conference is important, Richie, is because A lot of the people who are speaking at the conference are all doing those things that I have been talking about. They're building new systems that make the old systems obsolete without a shot fired. As you may know, a lot of the, if you watch the television programming or listen to governments, they will tell you these anarchists, they're very dangerous. They're going to blow stuff up. And yes, there was some anarchists in history who did those sort of things. They thought that was the way to get rid of government. But really, that's not the way, because the real true belief in anarchy is self-ownership. That has nothing to do with blowing stuff up or killing people, killing government people. Really, the only way that we can get this philosophy out there more is to create new systems that just make the old systems obsolete. So the entire conference is really all about that. And I think that's why it's become quite popular, Richie. And
solutions,
just so people... Just so people out there know, it is sold out, but you can actually watch the entire conference on a live stream that we're going to be doing. It's anarchopoco.com/livestream, so you can check that out. And the day after, actually, the conference is a Dollar Vigilante Summit, where we'll be talking all about this economic and financial and cryptocurrencies and gold and what's going on in the world and how to protect yourself and profit. And that actually isn't sold out. So you could come to Acapulco, watch the live stream by the pool, hang out with everyone at night with all the crazy parties that happen
Don't
here.
Don't tempt me.
And then after that, go to the Dollar Vigilante Summit as well.
It sounds brilliant. Don't tempt me. Anarchopulco.com/livestream and dollarvigilante.com for all the information. Brilliant stuff, Jeff. It's a tonic. And what I love about the conference is it's solution-based speakers. They're offering solutions. They have solutions. They're in the process of presenting and manufacturing solutions. I love it. Thanks for your time today, my friend. Brilliant to catch up with you again. You're welcome back anytime. Cheers, Jeff.
As a pleasure. Thank you, Richie.
Thanks. That said, the brilliant Dollar Vigilante himself, Jeff Berwick. What a top man Jeff is, live from Acapulco. Go to anarchopulco.com/livestream to find out more about the live stream. But all the information is also linked on dollarvigilante.com. Jeff is brilliant. We'll take a very quick break. When we come back, there'll be just about enough time to wrap it up.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
The Richie Allen Show relies on your support. Go to richieallen.co.uk and set up a monthly donation today. Asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv.
Great to have Jeff Berwick on the program. Really enjoyed speaking with Jeff. And a massive shout out to Tony Boxford, who came on in the first hour. A lovely man, Tony. He's hard of hearing, and he was a little bit worried about listening to or trying to understand my outrageous accent. But he's brilliant. He's a very good listener, Tony. And that's a very important story Tony told in hour one. The programme will be on podcast, of course, in a couple of minutes' time, 15 minutes' timer there, about 20 minutes, and it's on Podomatic.com, it's on iTunes, and it's on Spotify. Thanks to Simon Stewart for looking after the YouTube channel. Thanks again, Tony Boxford. Thanks to Jeff Berwick, DollarVigilante.com. Sorry I don't have any time to read any comments. The show flew by. We'll do it all again tomorrow, you and I, from 7 p.m. That is UK time, Wednesday's programme. Among the guests, the great Paul Craig Roberts joins the programme. He's absolutely hopping mad about the CIA and about memos and about Trump and about lots more besides. Top man, Paul, and he joins the show tomorrow. Going to finish up with some Def Leppard. I have no idea why. It was just there, so we said we'd give it a spin. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow. Bye now.